Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Tonight, I'm going to be discussing what at first might seem to be two quite disparate subjects, living with authenticity and falling in love with cancer. My guest is the radically brilliant author, speaker, and living truthfully and speaking authentically guru, Robert Rabin, who was diagnosed in December 2011 with stage 4 lung cancer and told he would be dead within 4 months. But, in keeping with his exceedingly contrarian nature, instead of dying, Robert Rabin spent the next 5 years diving deep into the centre of his being to find a life that he says cannot be vanquished by cancer or even by death itself. Robert Rabin, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you very much. In your intro, did you actually call me radically brilliant?
I did call you radically brilliant, but I took that from your own press release, Robert.
Well, that was really sweet. Okay, we're off to a good start, Sandy. Here we go.
We are. Before we start, I have one thing to say to our listeners. Please. If you're of a nervous disposition, be warned. This is a live interview with a man whose professional motto is have mouth, will travel. So I really cannot be responsible
Simmer down there, Sandy. Have you had some too much coffee today? What's happening?
I don't drink coffee, Robert. Let me tell our audience a little bit about you. I mean, you've definitely developed an international reputation as a distinguished self-awareness facilitator, a leadership advisor and a personal mentor. And you are the director of Speaking Truthfully, also the creative source of Speaking Truthfully, through which you offer masterclasses and private mentoring in authentic self-expression and public speaking. You're also the author of 8 books and hundreds of articles on authentic living, public speaking, leadership, spiritual activism and meditation. And as I said, be warned, authentic speaking is what we're going to be hearing tonight. So, Robert, tell us a little bit first about what happened to you at the end of 2011.
At the end of 2011, I was in Bali leading a retreat. And for the few months prior to that, I had been getting progressively worse in terms of back pain and spasms and so on. We couldn't figure out what it was. At the end of the retreat in Bali, I could scarcely walk and I was in real pain. And I realized I couldn't fly back to the States where I had just moved from Australia. So I had to go to Australia, which was a lot closer, and stay with some friends. About 2 weeks after that, I couldn't walk and was feeling really, really poorly. We went to the hospital in Gold Coast of Australia. I was admitted. And after a number of tests, biopsy, MRIs, x-rays, and so on, a group of doctors came to my hospital bed and said, Robert, you have stage 4 lung cancer. Your lower spine, hips, and pelvis are riddled with tumors. We're afraid you're at risk for spinal collapse, and by the way, you probably have 6 months to live, and there's not much we can do. And that happened, that was actually Christmas Eve 2011, and so I came back to the States shortly after that and began another adventure, but that's what happened at the end of 2011.
Now, you've told me that at the time, from the very beginning, you thought that the reality of your situation and its outcome would be determined by your response to it. And you decided that you were going to use the time that they said you had to go as deeply into yourself as possible and find your center of resistance. Was that center of resistance to cancer or center of resistance to life?
Well, I said, so there's a couple of things, Sandy. You know, first of all, I don't actually remember what I was experiencing or thinking at the beginning of 2012, to be very honest, because I had been in chronic pain for a number of months, and I had just flown back to the States. I was on painkillers, and it proceeded for a number of months. So some of what I'm saying now with you is looking in the rearview mirror. I'm not making things up, but I think we do want to be candid and honest and upfront, and saying that, you know, I'm not sure what was happening back then, but I do want to say this, but by way of maybe answering a little bit of your question, and this is an epiphany I had a few days ago, to be quite honest, when I was thinking about some themes for our conversation. This thing hit me, and I'd never really seen it before. I wondered why, over the last number of years, I've had the experiences I've had, which we'll probably talk about in a moment. And then it flashed on me a couple of days ago that the very first impulse I had and the very first thing I did when I was released from the hospital in early January 2012, spending a few more days at my friend's home in Australia. The very first thing that occurred to me and that I did was to make a videotape and send it out, you know, through the internet to friends and students and all of that, saying what had happened and saying that I wasn't sure what the outcome would be, but regardless, what I was going to do is come back to the States, find a place to live, and I was going to have a continuous open house for anybody who wanted to come, the purpose of which would be to accelerate our, I guess the Sanskrit word is sadhana, you know, the accelerate our diving deep. And it's like, okay, I've been on a spiritual path for 40 years, and whatever time I have left, we're going to really go for it. And that was the first thing. I was going to even call it the open house of great beings. I think whimsically I had said that. And it was, the reason it was a little bit of an epiphany for me in the last couple of days when I saw this is I had only dimly remembered that I had done that. But in prepping for our show and in having some recent conversations that you and I have had, some of that has come back, and I realized that was the first thing. It wasn't, how do I survive? How do I live? Should I start taking green smoothies? Should I change my diet? You know, it wasn't anything to do with the cancer per se. It was, let's fucking go for it, in whatever way that was going to manifest. And I'd never seen that before. And I really think, Sandy, that because that was my first impulse, my first response, that it was, maybe we could say, it was a kind of intention that set me on a path that was serendipitously at the same time as cancer, but wasn't really related to cancer. It was almost as if the cancer was serving as a guru. You know, a kick-ass guru that was like, okay, you've got 6 months to live. What are you going to do? Are you going to get, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, well, fuck it. I'm going to go for it.
That's
I'm going to find out who I am once and for all.
Okay. And what did you discover?
What did I discover?
Did you discover who you are?
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I did. Not immediately after, but it's been, where are we, 2007? It's been more than 5 years. When I got back to the States in January of 2012, the next 3 years, when I was going through chemo and I'd had some radiation in Australia. But the next 3 years were pretty much lost to me in terms of conscious awareness. I went on these what I call pony rides to oblivion. My consciousness was just taken out of my body to I don't know where. It wasn't to any kind of recognizable state. It wasn't bliss. It wasn't unity consciousness. It wasn't light. It was an oblivion. And I would be in an oblivion for days, weeks, and then I would sort of reappear, come back into my body, into time and space, and began to notice what was so upon my return from these journeys. Excuse me. And those lasted for about 3 years. My sister, Sandy, who you know, lives next door to me, fortunately, and was basically my angelic caretaker for those 3 years. We will sometimes now reflect on those years, and she'll tell me about things that happened that I have absolutely no recollection of. I lost 3 years in some way, except the, maybe we could say the legacy of those years or the inheritance of those journeys. And what I learned, I wouldn't say it was really a learning. Here's how I can language what happened. And again, I'm not attributing this to cancer. I think it had to do with what my initial response was to cancer as a catalyst for decision-making and really as a catalyst for an opportunity, right? I mean, cancer is just another opportunity to respond like anything. So,
Robert, I'm going to have to hold you there.
Yes,
so
no worries.
Hold that thought, and we'll be back in few moments. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author and authentic speaking guru, Robert Rabin, about surviving cancer long past his doctor's use-by date. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Radio's What Is Going On show. If you've been on a spiritual journey and know yourself to be more than just your body, mind and emotions, yet still struggle to fully love yourself and the life you're living. If you experience childhood challenges that continue to play out as limiting patterns in your daily life. If you long for success in your relationships and career, but keep finding it eludes you, I invite you to join me on the free Journey Back to Love Symposium that I'm co-hosting June 18th to 24th. You'll get valuable insights, tools, practical processes and gifts from 8 internationally renowned teachers and speakers that would not only dramatically shift your perceptions about love, but also help you understand and integrate all those places where you may have secretly believed that you were broken. So if you're ready to transform your beliefs about love, success and freedom, and finally put all your perceived limitations, fears and failures in your relationships and life behind you, visit thejourneybacktolove.com and join me on this free life-transforming journey back to love. I look forward to seeing you there.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Robert Rabin. You were just telling us what you learned about yourself.
Well, thankfully, in the break, I actually thought of a fourth thing that I learned.
Of course you did.
You know, we just keep on learning, Sandy, don't we? It's like,
we do, what a parade.
This is great. So, let me just say these quickly, and then if you want to ask a follow-up question, fine. There are four things that occurred during these pony rides to oblivion. The first thing was I would come back and become conscious again. One of the things that I noticed was that every time I came back, if we can analogize our life story to, let's say, an album of photos and mementos that progresses in a linear fashion, right? Then every time I would come back, I would notice that this sort of photo album had pages missing, not in sequence, but sort of randomly, to where I couldn't really remember different parts of my life. And then one day I came back and there was no more pages. And so at the risk of sounding like a cliche, I had lost the personal history of everything. I could still remember some things, but not as me. So the first thing that happened was this slow, progressive, complete dissolution of identifying, remembering, living in anything that had to do with, in quote, past. That was the first thing. The second thing was my relationship to time, which, and these things are still true to this day, is that time sort of dissolved. And it's not that I don't make appointments. I was sure to be on the phone today with you at precisely 1 minute after four. But I don't have the sensation of time. So there's no anxiety, there's no sort of futurizing, there's no time. And when I look at the clock in my room, and sometimes I'll just watch it go from, you know, 4 to 401 to 402, I just stop laughing and go, what the hell is that? So there's no time, that's the second thing. The third thing, and this was really significant and continues to be, is what I call the collapse of language. Language as the medium for understanding, for meaning, for significance, right, totally collapsed. And to this day, and of course the great irony is that I am a speaker and a writer and a teacher of public speaking who doesn't live in language anymore. The irony is not lost on me. But in terms of where we live and where we experience things, when we say whatever we say, right, it's in language. And the degree to which those linguistic pronouncements are real for us, that becomes our reality. But we've all experienced those moments in which we transcend ourselves, our mind, and language, and we're just living in a kind of, what would we say, you know, eternal present, right, where if someone speaks to us, it doesn't make sense. If our mind speaks to us, it doesn't make sense. We're just in things as they are. That was the third thing that happened. And the fourth thing, which I just realized during the break, is my relationship to what I call the thought stream. Some people call it the mind. I call it the thought stream, which is a little bit like language, because that's where language seems to occur to us in the thought stream, the thoughts and emotions, a little bit what you were talking about in the promo piece for your upcoming program, which, by the way, I recommend to everybody. So I know that I have thoughts, but I don't live there anymore. It's usually people who are on, let's say, a meditative path will meditate. They'll find some distance to their mind, But then when they get up off the cushion or they leave the zendo or the satsang room or wherever they happen to be and go back into their life, they'll find their way back into the thought stream. And so there's this constant conflict, almost dualism, right, between life in the mind and life on the other side of the mind. Well, one of the things that happened in these pony rides is some movers, apparently, came into my apartment, came into me, and moved me from my mind to some other place, which I call silence. Some people might call it awareness, the witness of the mind. I just call it silence. And they gave me a condo, and that's where I live now. So the fourth thing that happened is I don't live in the thought stream anymore, ever, at all. So those are the four things, as best I can put in language, that happened to me of their own over the course of about three and a half years, and during which time, really, I was in a kind of, what would we say? It was like a cocoon, really, because for two of those years, I spent about 22 hours a day in bed, and another year or so was kind of feeble. So I was really taken away to some other dimension, other reality about which I have very little recollection, except in the rearview mirror, this is what occurred. But as far as what actually happened day to day in those years, I have no idea. I have no idea. So, you know, quickly before the next break, when we were talking about, you know, loving cancer, you know, Robert fell in love with cancer. That's a provocative statement, and it's not something that I would want to urge others to do, because certainly cancer produces a lot of suffering for a lot of people. But it's also true, for me anyway, that my response to cancer was something that was a price that I would pay 10 times over if I knew that I could end up where I am. It's like the second coming of my guru, Swami Muktananda, who I met in 1973. These were both, well, I'm getting a little emotional here. These two events, meeting my teacher, I lived with him for 10 years, and then having cancer visit me, these two events were the two most significant and important milestones in my life in terms of the spiritual journey. Both of these were massive initiations into different realities. I have no idea, Sandy, and you and I have known each other for a long time. You know about my background, such as it is. Like you, we've been on our respective paths. We've done work. We've done the best we can, you know, to grow and learn and expand. I have no idea at all how, through my own effort, through any kind of strategy, technique, practice, or discipline, that I could have ended up where I am, that I could have somehow managed to produce a 3 or 4 year journey to oblivion in which these four learnings would occur. And I have been, I guess, it's fair to say, Sandy, correct me if you think I'm off, but I've been on a diligent spiritual path since my teen years, and I'm considerably older now. And so when you and I talk about, you know, oh, my God, I love cancer, well, fuck yes, I do, because while I don't attribute what happened to cancer, it showed up, and then it was my response to it. But I wouldn't have had that response had it not shown up. So I want to give a little love to cancer, like I give a lot of love to my guru, who wasn't the most pleasant person to be around for 10 years because he was an ego killer. You know.
So tell me this, Robert. If you live in this place of thought streams that you have no relationship to time. Before cancer, you were already teaching speaking authentically, you know, speaking truthfully. That was a big part of your life. Did that change? Did that become, you know, what happened to that through this experience? Did it become even greater part of your life? I mean, you're talking about responding. Yeah. And I think when we do respond without thinking too much, we do speak truthfully. We come from that place, you know, before we edit. So what's happened to the speaking authentically?
I know we're about to go to another break, so let me see if I can put it. There was a... It feels to me that there was just a quantum leap. In other words, it wasn't where I am now, how I speak, how I teach, feels disconnected from the past, though I can look back and trace a kind of history. But it's like you're going along, and then you just, you know, it's almost like in a cartoon where something really weird happens, and which is okay because it's cartoons, you know, where you're driving along and then an alien spaceship comes and picks you up and takes you somewhere else, kind of a thing. So it's just, it feels so different because there's a vast emptiness that I feel I live in, but it's a creative emptiness. It's an exuberant emptiness. It's an effortless emptiness. It's completely unguarded. Maybe that's the thing. Just, I'm trying to talk my way to see what it is with you. Maybe the greatest difference, Sandy, is there is nothing to protect. I don't have any guard up. It's wide open.
You have complete freedom. Yes, break time. We'll be back in a few moments.
Break time.
Okay, you're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with self-awareness facilitator, leadership advisor, and author Robert Rabin. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert Rabin, authenticity is your gig. It's pretty much your life's work. I'm curious to know, how did it become so? What is it about authenticity for you? I mean, where did it begin that you really wanted to start practicing and teaching authenticity?
Can I dodge that question for a moment?
No. As long as you okay, promise to come back to it. As long as you're not doing the politician's dodge.
Yeah, that's right. That's me, Rob the politician. Because right before the break, you said complete freedom. if you'll allow me, I want to come back to that word for a second.
Okay.
Because if I had to pick one word to represent not the process of the last 5 years, but let's say the result or the outcome, it would be that word, freedom. I don't want to say complete freedom because it sounds a little bit like throwing down, you know, a challenge to the all that is. I don't really want to do that. But a hell of a lot more freedom than I had ever experienced or that I had ever actually imagined because, and this is why I like the public speaking work I do, because it isn't intellectual knowing of freedom. It isn't a dogmatic representation of freedom. It has become an embodied freedom. And embodied to me means it. You are that. You don't know it. You don't think about it. You are that. And the speaking work to me is so profound because that's what really shows us whether or not we're free and unguarded, because whenever people stand up and begin to speak to others, right, there's a lot of perceived risk and insecurities come up. And it's a little bit like moving from the cafe where you talk about bullfighting and you get into the ring with the bull. Embodiment is about being in the ring with the bull, where you are, you don't know. And in fact, I'm giving a two-day speaking truthfully program next week up near Salinas, and I just revised the workbook that I use, and freedom became a dominant theme. And if I can just quickly read what's on the cover page of the workbook, this has to do with authenticity in general, but it is connected to the freedom. So here's what I wrote. There is great freedom, power, and magic in speaking truthfully. When we open our heart and unshutter our soul, when we stand up and speak from the utmost depth of our being, open and vulnerable, with courage and confidence, willing to be seen, to be heard, unafraid of our vast creative and expressive potency, then previously unimaginable things are suddenly possible within easy reach. We become beacons of infinite blessings to our own self and to everyone we meet. And this is where I ended up, in these lines, because there's something that I think is a little bit missing. Here comes a massive generalization, but nonetheless, a little bit missing in the way we do a lot of our spiritual work in America, which is it strikes me that it's a little bit like being in a cafe having a nice chat. We don't really do it in the ring with the bull. We go to retreats, we go to yoga classes, we take satsangs, and so on. But then we go back to our lives, and there's always a little bit of tension and conflict and sadness that comes back. The speaking work isn't just about knowing freedom, right? It's not about knowing that I am love or something like that. It's show me, express it to me. And 50% of the people that I've worked with, hundreds in the last 10 years since I've been doing this work, are committed people on spiritual paths with writers, teachers, and so on, and others. And you know what? Once they get up and have to speak from that place, it's a challenge for everyone because there are these layers of conditioning, of early childhood decisions, of taboos, of dogma that we have layered and layered and layered over that inner being of freedom so it can't speak. It can't show up except in a stereotypical fashion. I don't want to be like Eckhart Tolle. I've met him. He's a very nice man. He does good work. I don't want to be like that. He doesn't have a lot of color, range of motion. I wouldn't put him in a ring with a bull because he couldn't do anything. In other words, we've got to stop trying to grow up in these images and stereotypes of people who talk about stuff, whether they embody it or not is their business. And the real aim is to become free ourselves to be able to express our uniqueness in a free and creative way. It isn't about attaining something. This is what I thought for the first 40, 50 years of my search, Sandy. I thought the whole quest was self-realization. Bullshit. That's the fucking easy part. How long does it take to realize who you already are and who you always are? The issue is that we have never learned to express it. The real game is self-expression. And that's what happened in the freedom that I experienced in the last 5 years, is these layers were ripped from me. And there's the freedom that was indwelling but is now embodied and is expressed in everything I do.
You've written many, many books on authenticity. You've written the
Authenticity
Accelerator,
little...
The Five Principles of Authentic Living, Real-Time Speaking, and Speak Truthfully. Okay, now, one of your books, I think it was Speak Truthfully, tells a lot of stories of how many of your students were able to reclaim their lost power of self-expression, healed their wounds of self-doubt, restored their creative vitality, etc. You know, we live in a world that does not encourage authenticity. Everybody's looking for it, but we are not encouraged to be authentic.
Yeah.
We dissemble far too much. How do we even begin? You know, I think most people don't even know what is authentic for them. You know, we take in so much, you know, conditioned thinking from others.
That's it.
So many belief systems and not our own. How do we find, you know, what is authentic for us?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? First of all, let's go back to the authenticity theme and what is it. It's without wanting to be glib, it is a word. If we use that word, authenticity, to broadly describe what seems to be universal longing for happiness, fulfillment, purpose, belonging, you know, all of those kinds of things, okay. We can put it on, we can put the word authenticity and give it some steroids, and then it can, you know, point more toward this kind of freedom that we're talking about. The irony is, we don't know what that is for us because of all those things that you mentioned. We're so buried and steeped in everything that isn't us. So then we go to a teacher of authenticity and we go, tell me what it means to be authentic. And you go, I don't know, honey. You got to figure it out for yourself. That's the whole deal. You know, but... how I do it with the people in the class is, well, a lot of it has to do with the way I hear them and feel them, and I constantly challenge people. You know, we do a little bit of sort of almost a kind of inquiry process. It's not formulated like that, but when people are up there, and I'll have them give a talk, for example, and I'm noticing that their body is maybe turned a little bit away from the audience. I'll point that out. Why are you turning away? If I notice they're not necessarily looking at people, I'll go, why are you avoiding people? Why aren't you willing to make contact? If I notice that, and we all do this. This isn't magical. When you just get a feeling someone is not really telling the truth, we know that. And the truth has different levels. It can be, what do you really think? What do you really feel? But the speaking truthfully level of truth has to do with, can you speak, will you speak from that place of authenticity within you? Which means you've got to get there. But what is it? It's not a static place. This is the thing. What authenticity is for me is a context for living. It mirrors and mimics life. There's no content. It isn't this, here's what it is for me. Authenticity is a context of freedom, spontaneity, creativity, and expression. Those four elements are inarguably part of existence. You can't argue that. Existence itself is free, it is spontaneous, it is creative, and above all, it is expressive. It expresses. On this earth, there are over 8 million species of living things. And every year, between 100 and 150,000 new species of living things are discovered by various scientists on this planet alone. So you want to tell me how life isn't expressive? It's all it does. But it doesn't express just like a slightly medicated meditation teacher. It expresses like 8 million different species on this earth alone. So what is going to be your unique kind of expression? It actually is already existing beneath the layers of everything that you pointed out. So we have to begin to trust, to explore, to risk, to experiment, but we really don't want to do it because we're so afraid of the freedom. We'd rather become a Buddhist. We'd rather become this person or that person. Sorry, that sounded like a cut against the Buddhist. That's not. But we want to become something else other than free.
Other than who we are.
It's other than here we are. You know, I just read a quote this morning by George Bernard Shaw, and it was something like, you don't have to find yourself. Give me a second. You don't have to find yourself. You have to create yourself. I love that. But when you look at break time.
It's break time. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with prolific writer, public speaking guru, and author of several books on speaking truthfully and living authentically, Robert Rabin. We'll be back after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert Rabin, is there anything you want to add that you didn't get to finish saying? Before I ask you something else.
No, well, you know, come on, Sandy, you know me. Yes, I could talk for the next week.
Of course you could.
I don't remember what
talk
we're talking
for America.
About. Let's go on to whatever else you do. But if you're going to give me a moment to sort of summarize or complete where we've been so far.
Well,
and the
I
word you like to use is authenticity.
There's something that's emerging for me. And I'm going to speak authentically here. You know, looking at your various books, looking at your life's work, looking at the cancer, you know, the cancer and where it took you to, I see many, many overlapping threads. I mean, you wrote The Five Principles of Authentic Living. You published it in 2011 before you had cancer. And the five principles, you know, you've kind of set it all down to five simple principles for authentic living in 10 words. And those words, you know, they are be present, pay attention, listen deeply, speak truthfully and act creatively. Yep. And it seems to that they completely, you know, encapsulate everything that you experienced when you had your pony rides to oblivion. Now, I know many people say that cancer is a gift and that it allowed them to come back to a place of recalibration, you know, recalibrating their life, putting it back on course, you know, allowed them to be more authentic. There seems to be this huge connection there. And what concerns me is, you know, what can we do? I mean, we don't have to wait for cancer to do this.
No.
You know,
no.
And what can you share with us that would help us realize that we, you know, we don't have to wait for that. We can become authentic now.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up those principles. You know, I did write them just before I got really sick, and they are true today. Just very quickly, I would say what happened in the last 5 years with respect to those five principles is instead of my writing them in these long flashes of intuition, they became embodied. So again, I can't not function from within those five principles, 10 simple words. But again, they're context, right? They're not prescriptive. They're a context. This is, and that's not really what people want, because it then becomes their responsibility to enact freedom, which means they're going to have to start pushing against the socialization, the conditioning, the taboos, you know, the culture and so on. I'm completely out of control, as you well know.
You've been remarkably restrained tonight, Robert, for which I'm very grateful.
Because I love and respect you, as you know. And there's... Okay, now you've just taunted me. Why did you do that? I will say that I got a lovely text from Sandy just a few minutes before showtime reminding me, call in at 4:01. And I know that she's getting ready for the show, as I should. But I couldn't help but text back, what are you wearing? And she said, none of your business, and we went from there. But never mind. Let's go back to authenticity.
See, you had to do it, didn't you?
Well, I'm not talking about the other thing that you said I can't talk about. So here's the thing. Your question is so important. Here's the thing. Mary Oliver is a gorgeous poet, and there's a line from one of her poems that is quoted over and over and over, and I'll do it now. She writes, tell me, what is it you intend to do with your one wild and precious life? I'm like, what do you intend to do? So at some point, people have to wrestle with that. Here we are alive. And for whatever reason, maybe it's because I grew up in the 60s, I don't know, but I was on this stuff when I was 11, had my first awakening, and was propelled by the social upheaval in the 60s every day I was trying to answer, what is it you intend to do with your one wild and precious life? A lot of other people, my older brother, for example, who I also love and respect, he's a good father and a husband and so on, he went high school, college, law school, law practice, family, kids, and he's still a lawyer. My path, let's just say, was a little bit different. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong or inauthentic with his life. I'm saying he hasn't, in my opinion, and I would say it if he were on the call with us, hasn't been inflamed from within the way I was or the way you are, the way many people are, with what the hell am I going to do with my life? Who the hell am I? It was some kind of that recognition of the extraordinary opportunity that life is. And everything in the dominant culture works against becoming conscious of that extraordinary thing and just wants you to basically go to Disneyland, you know, or get an NFL football team, wear a jersey, get a job, and then die. Well, fuck that. So it isn't as easy as what can people do, because here's what I will say to that question. If people sincerely want something deeper, something truer, something more free and more creative and expressive and sexy and hot, if they want that, then my message to them is, you fucking trust every impulse you have and follow it and do it, and you'll get there. That's what I would say. But you can't fabricate that for people. You know, you got to want it. Now, the good news is there are so many allies in the way our culture is to stimulate a deeper questioning, because there's so many things that are off the rails. You know, it's like it's really hard to be completely asleep again. We've got, you know, I don't want to switch it into a political conversation, but look at the fucking bozo in the White House. Come on, if that's not going to wake you up, then you're going to sleep for 1,000 years. Did I say that out loud?
You did say that out loud. And it's okay. On record.
Okay. Well, that's fine. So one of the things is but, you know, here's the other thing I will say. When we see someone who either has broken free or is breaking free, maybe they're a poet or an artist or whoever they are, there's something about how that person is and lives. They're Shakti, right? Their energy, their fierceness, their madness, they're out of the box. We go, I want that. You know why people take my courses? And in Australia, where I created this 11, 12 years ago and did a lot of it for 10 years before I came here and got sick, because people heard me speak, they saw me speak, or they had something to do with me, and they saw the way that I spoke, the way that I was in my speaking, and they said, I'd like to be more like that. Not to imitate me, but because I speak with a lot of freedom, a lot of creativity, a lot of openness, a lot of connection, and they went, I want that. There's no dogma. I'm not teaching something about non-duality or duality or tri-duality or you're one with the light. I'm talking about being in the ring with the bull, where show me your freedom, open your mouth, walk into a room, tell the truth. So maybe, you know, it's two things. Take Mary Oliver's piece of poetry to heart. What are you doing? What are you doing deeply? What are you doing with your life? And the other thing is, be willing to be affected and inspired by people you see who are not being what you think people should be, but are these gorgeous towers of freedom, but not reckless freedom, not the freedom of the mind, the freedom that comes from the depths. So there's a big difference. That's why I trust that place in me, and why I don't need anyone to tell me that I shouldn't swear and I should speak in a certain way and I shouldn't do this and shouldn't do this. I'm trying to get rid of those taboos. I don't want to be a nice person. I want to be a free person, because I know in that freedom is something that we can trust, but we're afraid of it. We are afraid of really discovering how extraordinary and magnificent we are, in favor of simply being imitative.
And do you think that when people do find the freedom of expression, that they do discover how magnificent they are?
I think they go hand in hand.
You think they do?
I do. I know they do. Look, before I started doing this public speaking work, I was, as you said, a teacher of meditative inquiry, and I was doing it the old-fashioned way. I will tell you that by any measure, Sandy, by any measure, by any standard, the amount of freedom and expansion and elevation that people experience in a two-day speaking course, I would measure that against 10 years of doing satsangs twice a week. Because it's in the ring with the bull.
How do you get people to take that first step? Because that's the hardest one. Yeah, how do you get people to take that first step? Because we do, you're absolutely right, we do admire people who have that ability. And yet most of us feel, you know, we don't know even where to begin to express ourselves.
Well, they don't have to. That's, I don't try to get people to do that. I can't. There's no way to do it. They have to want to. It's a process that people have to come to. So as long as they do, as long as someone shows up and says just a little bit, you know, they just show up. I don't care if they're afraid, if they're terrified. What doesn't matter, they just have to show up for the game.
We're at the end of the show. Give me just one phrase, a couple of words to leave people with about speaking authentically.
Be present, pay attention, listen deeply, speak truthfully, act creatively, and take Sandy's upcoming program.
Perfect. Robert Rabin, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
For more information about Robert Rabin, his books, his coaching and speaking services, and his blog, visit robertrabin.com. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I look forward to having your company at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.